This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, in Omaha with the VSiN crew. Jensen, we got it. For what you can tell us on the air to begin this Friday morning show, how was night number one in Omaha?
It was good. We had a lot of people exchanging contact info. We had a lot of people coming up and interacting. So there were plenty of Jell-O shots bought. We have updates on the actual real Jell-O shot challenge, which at this point, we're starting to get most of the people coming in town as far as fans go. We got our first contingent of LSU and Arkansas fans, and we would expect them in earnest later today. We do have massive odds movement in our own VSiN Jell-O Shot odds board. So stories were told, tall tales were left, and we shall see what we can add for the latest chapter later today.
It's like anything else, right? Now that we have new data, we got to switch those numbers and use the data that we found last night there at Rocco's and see how that's going to play into day number two. A great show lineup here on this Friday. Greg Peterson is going to join us here in this very hour. Hour number one, to break down his Major League Baseball card. And yes, we've got day baseball for Greg, so I know he's going to be happy about that. Lou Finocchiaro, hour number three is going to be spectacular. I get so choked up when you look at the guest list here. Lou Finocchiaro is going to join us right off the top here, Jensen. That's going to be spectacular. Really interesting main event tomorrow night, Joaquin Buckley against one of the greatest 170-pounders of all time, and Kamaru Usman. So we'll talk about Usman as an underdog with Lou and see if we can find some gems on that card. Billy Boddy is going to be in studio here with me at Circa in Las Vegas. We'll catch up on Billy and everything going on in the world of soccer. And oh my goodness, what a night last night down in Sunrise, Florida. Yes, the sun did come up or will come up in Florida today. But a wild turn of events there. Jonathan Davis, JD, is going to join us in hour number three to look ahead now to a series that is knotted up at two. And without further ado, that gets us to our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Okay, Jensen, history of the NHL. You go up 3-0 in the Stanley Cup final game. You get the win. Until last night. So, teams that led 3-0 in the Stanley Cup final game, 37-0, 37-1 now. Unbelievable comeback by Edmonton. Down 3-0. They score the next four. They pull Stuart Skinner. Calvin Pickard comes in there and plays lights out. Does give up a goal in the final seconds of regulation to force overtime. And then in OT, it's Leon Draisaitl with the game winner. And Edmonton does it again, coming back somehow 5-4 here and knotting this series up at two games apiece. Going to go back to Edmonton now with that quote-unquote better ice. The over again comes through, Jensen. I didn't play a total last night because you know I was leaning towards the under with that bad ice. And I just kept watching it going, I'm so glad I didn't play it because here we go again. You just can't find an under in this series. And yet, somehow, now Edmonton has flipped the script. What do you make of that frantic finish last night in regulation to get to overtime and then the game winner by Draisaitl?
Yeah, first of all, as I told you, you have to go across state lines here, and it's not too long of a drive or a walk to be able to do it. And so the great Mike Palm and I were sitting there, and we were actually thinking yesterday afternoon, we're like, you know what? I think we can get there. You know, we were talking with Rachel Dorey yesterday. If you are an Edmonton backer, you know, was finding an alternative way to go after, you know, Florida just to take the team total and go under and kind of ladder that the reverse way. I'll tell you what was fascinating is, again, the first period here, Dave, right? Where it looked like Florida's just going to impose their will. Kind of a theme we had talked about, like if you felt that the Panthers were just, they wanted that sense of urgency, they knew that Edmonton would be coming, let's do everything possible to try and take them off their game. Yeah, this is Stuart Skinner of games 1-3. We certainly didn't see anything resembling what he had been in game 4 and beyond in these playoffs and past ones. But buddy, I mean, it was Mitch and JVT, Stormy, her husband, we're all sitting there watching, and like we all had the same reaction, just kind of put our hands on our head, like, you got to be kidding me that this is the way that this is going to end. And credit where it's due, you know, Leon Draisaitl comes off the milk carton, as Paulie Howard would say, and finds himself right in the middle of another huge moment. And here we are, buddy, what we talked about yesterday, right? Game 7 urgency for Edmonton, better late than never. They find themselves now level, and all of a sudden this series takes a complete 180 turn, and the pressure goes back onto Florida.
Here's the amazing thing, too. First of all, if you're Stuart Skinner, you're like, hey, what did I say? Just don't give me 5-on-5s. Nope, it's a two-man advantage. There's a goal. Oh, it's another power play. It's 2-0. And then, you know, for Pickard, they didn't go in the sin bin, right? So they played 5-on-5 high. They gave him the backup goalie a chance, and he came through with a massive save when it was 3-1 on a breakaway. Could have easily flipped that script there, 4-1. Dreisaitl's goal in overtime. Here's what's amazing about that. Conn Smythe today, he has now moved ahead of Connor McDavid in the Conn Smythe.
Wow.
Sam Bennett's still the favorite at plus $1.50. Dreisaitl goes from 12-1. And with that overtime game winner, now goes to plus +250. Connor is 3-1. That is amazing to me. That, again, look, he's setting records now for overtime goals here in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so you can understand that. But it almost feels like now, Draisaitl, Connor, who knows, if you want to back Edmonton, maybe just go to the Edmonton side, because that could get really dicey in the voting there. I think we all know who the best player is, but is that what the award's going to be? We got to get into that interpretation of if Edmonton comes back. Wow, what a wild game that was last night. We talked about him yesterday, Jacob Mizrowski, and the Miz of Milwaukee did not disappoint in his debut. 5 no-hit innings, Jensen Lewis. You said, hey, your advice would be just go out there and be you. If this is him, whoo, look pretty darn good. Struck out 5, 81 pitches, gets taken out of there. And look, it looked like maybe an ankle situation there. Hopefully it's nothing major to pull him out. But what do you make of this for a guy that's throwing sinkers at over triple digits?
Yeah, buddy, it just kind of the fury that we talked about yesterday, the herky jerk of it, but also how difficult it would be for hitters to be able to pick up not only the fastball, but hey, let's go ahead and add in, not only do you have the horizontal movement, but you have the vertical movement and trying to put bat to ball there. Good luck at 101, 102. Yeah, you hope he's fine. It was a weird dismount, buddy. You know, the way he finished that one throw, and then it's still in my mind, I'm like, how in the heck did he do that? How did he roll it the way that he did? It's just a normal release, and all of a sudden, that's what happens. So, obviously, hope he's okay, but you understand why the hype is what it is now, Dave. I mean, looking at what this kid brings to the table, not to say you want to jump on him for Rookie of the Year at this point, but hey, you know, if he's going to be in the rotation for the rest of the year and he puts up stuff like this, good luck hitting this guy, because that was a phenomenal debut.
6-0 shutout win for the Brew Crew in this one. So cash all those numbers there. Under, by the way, was 7.5, and it stays under even though the Brew Crew gets 6 by themselves. That's how good Mizrowski was yesterday. And again, if the injury doesn't happen, Jensen, they're still not going to push the kid, right? They're like, we weren't going to see history in a no-hitter for a rookie out there in his first major league start, right? They wouldn't have let him go that far anyway if the ankle roll hadn't happened.
Yeah, no chance. But again, just if you're drawing it up and you're like, okay, we want to see what this kid can do, and you have all the hype and everyone's amped up to see, you know, just how fast this guy throws. No question, this is exactly outside the injury. This is the best you could have hoped for. And anxious to see now here the next couple of turns through what he does, because you know, when Skeens came up, it was a similar idea of stuff of like, this is high octane fastball. This is a boatload of movement. The off speed was very crisp. I think that's the thing I'm looking for now, Dave, as we move forward, and especially looking at what his projected starts and turns in the rotation could look like the next 2-3 times through. Man, not asking for 5 no-hit innings, but limiting damage the way that he did yesterday. He does that the next couple of times through. Brew Crew all of a sudden have a front of the rotation type guy that's going to immediately help them right now at this point in the season.
We've got round two of the U.S. Open is underway at Oakmont right now. It has begun here on this Friday morning. And the storyline is going to be today's the cut day, right? So we're going to see who's going to make it. That projected cut, Jensen, is plus three. You know who's sitting at plus three? Scottie Scheffler. Who's sitting at plus four? Rory McIlroy. Somebody we gave out on Monday at 3-1 and missed the cut. And he looked great early, and then he reverted back to Rory's. And I'm like, there's the guy. That's the guy I've been fading here. So it's going to be interesting today. JJ Spaun yesterday with the round of the day, 66, 4-under par. The only guy that went through it bogey-free, which is pretty amazing on this golf course to do that. So those numbers are going to change. Here's the amazing thing. For Scottie Scheffler, who's on the cut line, Jensen Lewis, he's still the second betting choice to win the tournament. They will not give you the advanced pricing. It doesn't matter. Might miss the cut. We're not going to give you those cookies out there because you know what you and I are looking for. Those 10-1s, they are not to be found out there in the marketplace right now. Scottie Scheffler is plus 650. John Rahm is the overnight leader now in the odds board at plus 550. Colin Morikawa, even par round four off the lead at 12-1. And Brooks Koepka is back in the mix here at a major. Yeah. Major Brooks is back. 12-1 for Brooksy. So we'll update those numbers. By the way, JJ Spaun, your first round leader, is also 12-1 to win this golf tournament. So we'll update that as the show goes on. All right, when we come back, let's get into the Thunder and the Pacers. We got a series there. We got a series with the Panthers and the Oilers. We get ready to go north of the border for Game 5 Saturday. All of those changing numbers when you come back with us. And you look great, Jensen. One night in Omaha. Big boy, you're ready to roll. I see it in your eyes. You can do it. We are back with much more on the NBA and the NHL next here. VSiN by the books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the books right here on VSiN.
We're going to have Greg Peterson join us here in the next segment to break down everything in the Major League Baseball docket for the day. And we've got a big one tonight, and this is going to be in Indiana, OKC against the Pacers. And you don't want to say, it kind of feels like what we watched last night down in Sunrise, right? When you're down 2-1 and you're certainly like Edmonton was, you're up against it. And you're down 0-3 in the game, and then somehow you turn that thing around, flip it, get the win in overtime 5-4. I don't think Oklahoma City wants to fall down to whatever the basketball equivalent would be of 3-0 early in the second period like Edmonton did last night. But now there's going to be some pressure on OKC if they get off to a bad start like Edmonton did last night. 6-point favorites for OKC in the road. I like the Pacers at 5.5 in game 3. There should always be a sense of urgency, Jensen. This is the NBA Finals or the Stanley Cup Finals. It shouldn't need to be, oh, well, now we really got to turn it up a notch here, right? I mean, every game, it should be like that theoretically. But, you know, we're all human beings, and sometimes you react differently to situations. 226 is that total. It did stay under in game 3. What do we make of this number tonight? I don't want to say Indiana's not playing with house money either, because I think they're looking at it like, if we really want to win this thing, we got to win tonight too and go up 3-1.
Yeah, and kind of the urgency too. I think I was just looking at social media yesterday, our great friend Wes Reynolds saying, you're paying the zigzag tax here, okay? And just kind of looking at where the Thunder have been atrocious on the road against the spread, but kind of looking at also, you know, where this game could be from a pace standpoint. Do we expect it to be very similar, at least in theory, last night, where you looked at the Oilers and the Panthers, and we thought, if Florida wants to get out there and just try and take Edmonton right out of it, they did. They just could not hold the line. Do the Thunder have a similar respect of, all right, we've got to make this happen, and we've also got to understand, too, that the Pacers know, hey, Dave, that the Pacers have a game 7 feel to it, knowing like, hey, we do not want the Thunder to even this out and we lose home court.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have an anticipation from a pace standpoint. If you're looking at this game, first half over might be a way to go. Just knowing OKC wants to get out. They want to do their thing. They want to feel good about where they're at. But also, if you make it a track meet, what team is fully equipped to be able to do that? It's the Pacers. And what does the bench look like? What is the bench scoring comparatively from last game to this game? Are there adjustments here from both head coaches? Anxious to see what that supporting cast does as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. How will that first half be played, right? Because I think that fourth quarter of game three, OKC got beat by their own strength, right? Like, oh, let's play a half-court game, and they got shut down. They couldn't score all of a sudden, right? Advantage Indiana in that scenario. So, yeah, you might get two willing participants to say, all right, let's keep this thing flowing and not get bogged down in the half court and might get tight up against the shot clock. That's an interesting read there to look that first half over. And I'm with you on that. I kind of like that style and mentality. And I do think mentality is going to play a big part of this thing. Like, all right, guys, look, let's not go up against the shot clock. We're better than they are. We want more possessions. Right? If you're the better team, and I'm assuming OKC thinks they're the better team, we'll find out if that's the truth or not. You say, give me more possessions. If we're better than you are, then that's going to favor us the more times we have the opportunity to score the ball. So I'm with you on that OKC might be a willing participant to run here early, and then let's see what it looks like late in that second half. And again, it was 64-60 for that over in the game three, and then somehow stays under when it gets tight in the second half. I think you're right. You could see a repeat performance of that. Does it have to be SGA tonight, Jensen? We talked about it a little bit where we thought it had to be Connor McDavid last night, and yet Connor did not score, and yet the Oilers still get the win despite not getting the heroics from McDavid. Does it have to be SGA, or can it be the others like a Jalen Williams?
Yeah, Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren were kind of where I was looking. So here are, from a player prop standpoint, just happened to pull it up here. As far as Jalen Williams goes, I think a facilitation factor there could certainly be alive, right? The assists of five or more right now, just happened to pull it up. $1.50 there on BetMGM, $1.54 on DraftKings. I think Chet Holmgren, you look at the rebounds and assists combo prop, anything at 10 or more, seeing across the board, $1.40, $1.46 on FanDuel. If you want to jump into the plus money, MGM is offering a plus 105 on over 10.5, but those are the two that kind of stuck out to me. And, you know, hey, TJ McConnell, we kind of saw a little Robin to the Batman of the starting five. Of where, you know, the Pacers were, looking at his rebounds assist prop as well. If you can get him probably around, I think the over 5.5 is a play. You're going to pay a little bit, minus $1.40 on DraftKings, but just a guy who's going to be inundated, you know, kind of with both sides of the ball there. Six rebounds plus assists feels very doable for him in his role.
Isn't it fascinating compared to your sport where you look at, say, hockey and basketball, and you say, I got to get the others involved, right? Like, if you're Francisco Lindor, I'm like, dude, I need you to do something. Like, it's got to be you, right? You're standing in the dish by yourself, mano-a-mano with the pitcher. In basketball, and even in football to a degree, where you're like, if you're a Tom Brady, I'll kind of spread the ball around to get everybody involved, get everybody a touch sort of feel. It is wild that that's what we ask the greatest of their sports to do. Like an SGA, like a Connor McDavid. So I'll be curious to see if he tries to take over a little bit more, or a Halliburton, right? That was the conversation of Halliburton. He's got to do more, and he did in game three, and it worked to their success. Fascinating to look at the star players and what role they're expected to play. We're going to go back north of the border here for game five. That's going to be tomorrow night already. Quick turn here in the Stanley Cup final. So normally you get that 2-3 days, not here. Just going to get one, and you're back in Edmonton. Boy, if you're Florida and you're like, we're up 3-0 and we're up 2-1, if we just do something that historically had not been done before, we're going back up there 3-1. Now it's 2-2. Jensen, money line price here in Edmonton's minus $1.20. You want to get them on the puck line. You can get 2-1 here. Do we feel like an avalanche might be coming north of the border?
Yeah, buddy, I think it's shifted in a big way. And a shout out to our friend and colleague, Jonathan Davis. How about this nugget for not only what happened last game, but something to think about as we move forward here over the weekend. So the past three seasons under Paul Maurice, Florida is 21-2 when they lead after the first period in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Dave, where have both losses come? When in that 21-2 record, they've come right here,
Edmonton,
in the Stanley Cup final to Edmonton. So games 1 and games 4, that is where those two losses have happened. So again, our handicap looking at Florida wants to get out early. They want to try and take Edmonton out of it. Mm. They certainly had that advantage, but remarkable really to see what Edmonton has been able to do from the comeback fashion. But right now, buddy, just even looking at, you know, some of the numbers and where the splits are on VSIN, the puck, you know me, I love a puck line.
Oh yeah.
Right now, 38% of the bets, 85% of the money already on the Edmonton puck line. And, you know, it, just to tick over 53% of the bets, 64% of the money on just the money line at $1.20 at DraftKings. So here we are. And I'll be the first to admit it. Like, I was with you last night. Rachel Dory presents us the physics lesson and all the issues about the ice. I'm like, yeah, this is an under. And then you have the comeback the way that it was. If Florida just kind of plays a semblance of defense, that under probably gets home. Now, I think it's a complete shift now mentality-wise, too, of Edmonton just got, okay, boom, fellas, we did exactly what we had to do. Now we go play offense the way we know how on the best ice in the NHL.
Could I interest you in a Conn Smythe ticket on the Bobber? It's 75-1 now. 75-1. Jensen, he went from the favorite for the Panthers. Yeah. Bennett was right there, right? Bennett's still been there. He's still plus $1.50. 75-1. Look, it would take a shutout. But by the way, yeah. I don't think it's dead. I don't think that's a dead ticket if you wanted to take a pizza money stab on it. But he'd have to have a complete reversal of fortune that I don't think we see. But it is stunning to look at the change. Look at what's happened here. Kachuk with a couple goals last night, 10-1. Marchand's drifted back to 14-1. I mentioned Connor is not even the betting favorite for the Edmonton side. It's now Dreisaitl. It's amazing how these boards have changed. And look at Calvin Pickard. 100-1. Comes in to save the day. And now he's right below Bobber on the first side if you're watching at VSiN.com. It is amazing how it's never dead. It's never over till it's over, Yogi Berra. So right now, those changing numbers there in the Conn Smythe. If you want to bet some ponies, we got you covered right here with our friends over at First Bet. So you sign up now, you're going to get access to exclusive promotions, bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races every single day right from your phone or your computer. Visit firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VSIN200, score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Do not miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com. The man who never sleeps, Greg Peterson, is joining us next to get his docket on the Major League Baseball card. That's next here at VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue the Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you on this fine Friday. Jensen, I know we want to get some reviews on the Jell-O shots, and I think maybe our next guest would like to have some questions and answers with you about that. The one and only Greg Peterson. Give him a follow at GUnit_81. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. I mean, Greg, you do these beer reviews here across the network, which are spectacular. Have you ever done a Jell-O shot review?
I have not, and I can tell you, I am from the great state of Wisconsin, UW-Oshkosh, where they call us Sloshkosh for a reason. It is very much a party school. It is very much a school where the grades, I mean, they call it the Harvard of the Midwest for a reason, but you know what, in order to get into the Harvard of the Midwest, you know how to have a good time, right? As well. I love beer reviews, and I absolutely would love nothing more than to try a Jell-O shot, if at all possible, because I recognize that it's hard for them to be able to travel. These are very, very delicate, sort of just, shall we say, concoctions.
Yes.
But if at all possible, would love to be able to give not just one, many Jell-O shot reviews, and absolutely give our friends over there at Rocco's the royal treatment.
Yeah, I mean, Jensen, you'd have to try them all, right? I mean, you got to try them all from the different schools.
I'm up for it.
Yeah, the unique part, and I think, Greg, you're well equipped to do this, is you have four flavors, basically. So you get to choose not only the flavor, But then also, you know, which school you want your tally added to. So all I can tell you, they're sneaky, man. And for those of us in the Midwest, we know how to stay warm, you know, in the cold months. It is refreshing. I'll give you that. Like, it's sneaky potency, but it is very refreshing. Like, yesterday, the sun was out on the patio.
Oh.
Very refreshing. Get to come into the AC. But, yes, if there's anyone that can get to the bottom of not only the shots but also the reviews, it is our man, Greg Hoops Peterson.
I think you are definitely the man for the job there. We know for Pittsburgh, the man for the job is always Paul Skeens. It's Paul Skeens Day here for the Buccos. They're going to be in Chicago taking on the Cubs. We'll go total there of 7. But, Greg, I talked about this in parlance with the U.S. Open, right? It's so hard to get a fair number on a guy like Scottie Scheffler, no matter where he is in his particular round. Are we getting to that point with Paul Skeens? Because I see that the Pirates obviously are like $1.30 on the first five, and yet the Cubs are the favorite for the full game at a minus $1.15. How do you navigate a Paul Skeens performance?
Yeah, it's really tough because with Paul Skeens, you know that he's going to go out there. He's going to be all about his business. You know that you're getting his best. .188 ERA this far this season, giving up a half home run per 9 innings. Here's the issue with Paul Skeens, though. It's everyone not named Paul Skeens for the Pittsburgh Pirates and all the schlubs around him. 29th in the big leagues in terms of runs per game. Bullpen that has let him down time and time again. Like, the team is 6-8 right now with him posting up a sub-2 ERA. This is Jacob DeGrom 2.0, what we're witnessing right now. The guy goes out there, he gives you a great performance, and everyone else finds a way to give the game away. And now they have to face off against the Cubs team that entered in the day on Thursday, number one in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, and with the Chicago Cubs, number one in terms of bullpen ERA over the last 30 days as well. And it's not even close. Cubs bullpen over the last 30 days, sub-1.2 ERA. No team below a 2.37 outside of them. These guys like Daniel Palencia and Drew Pomeranz have come from absolutely nowhere for the Cubs. And Cade Horton, I always like to call him Cade Horton, here's a who. He's been doing a rock solid job as well. 4.11 ERA, right around there with regards to fielding dependent. If he can continue to do that, and the Cubs can get into the bullpen, because the wind is going to be sort of blowing directional to begin the game and then blows out as the game progresses, I do think that the Cubs get the job done here, and that's a big reason why I did bet them on the money line. I do like the Cubs.
I think it's a great spot, and appreciate that sentiment, too. We will also highlight Paul Skeens and the Cubs coming up in Daily Diamond. So great minds think alike here, Greg. I think also great minds, you and I targeting the Phillies today. rarely do we get to see them as quote-unquote home run line underdogs, but that is the case at some of the books here. Short money line price, though, in a very intriguing matchup. Kevin Gausman going for the Toronto Blue Jays. Your handicap for this one and potentially a total play as well.
Absolutely. I do like the over here because for Kevin Gausman, he just hasn't been sharp for the Toronto Blue Jays recently. Out of his last 9 starts, he has given up at least 3 runs in 6 of them. Now, the fielding independent is a little bit better than that. Gausman's still not giving up a ton of homers, but outside of Kyle Schwarber, it's not really the deep ball that you fear when you're growing up against the Philadelphia Phillies. It's these guys just time and time again being able to move the line. And for Ranger Suarez, I do think that there's a little bit of regression doing for him as well. He has given up just 6 runs over the course of his last 6 starts. Keep in mind that he gave up 7 runs in his first start since coming off the injured list, and that's always something that you want to throw away. For those who watch baseball, typically when a guy is making his first start coming off the injured list, there's a little bit of rust. They need to get the kinks sorted out, and he's been able to do so ever since then. But I do think that for this Phillies team, they get to the Blue Jays bullpen as well, which has been very good recently. But I think that they're riding a little bit high as well. Obviously, with Philadelphia Phillies, it's been a little bit rough with their bullpen as well ever since Jose Alvarado decided that he was going to take weight loss supplements and get suspended for 80 games. But I do think that for the Phillies, find a way to get to Gausman. I do like the fact that Kyle Schwarber has done what he's done, even with having Bryce Harper out. These guys like Trey Turner, Nick Castellanos, they're doing a good job finding a way on base. I do think that they find a way to get to Gausman, get that over, and get the money line.
The old weight loss supplements get you every time, Greg. Mets, the Mets and the Rays are going to do should be a really interesting series this weekend up there in New York City. Now, the Mets right now feel like the heavyweights, and maybe the Rays feel like the light heavyweights in this scenario, but they're playing really good baseball too. Is this a little bit punching out of their weight class? Can the Mets keep this good vibes train rolling?
I do think so. For the Mets, if you had the run line on Thursday, by the way, man, to lose that on the wild pitch that you did. And I raised my hand. I had the Mets run line on Thursday. There were a few rough run line beats. I also had the Astros. I also had the San Francisco Giants. Oh. So for those of you that might have laid a run and a half on any of those games on Thursday, I feel your pain, but I'm a sucker for pain. I'm going to be right back on it. I like what I've seen out of Clay Holmes this year. He's been able to do a nice job in terms of keeping things out in front of him, only giving up one home run for nine innings, 295 ERA. Fielding like depends a little bit above that, but Taj Bradley, with his career low in terms of strikeouts per nine rate, he's given up 1.2 home runs, north of three walks per nine innings. I do think that the Mets team that is really starting to find it with Juan Soto. Remember, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, oh, what's wrong with Juan Soto and everything like that. Well, right now, it's looking like nothing whatsoever. Francisco Lindor playing through that injury, and the Mets also having the number two team in terms of bullpen ERA as well. I think that that's going to be big. I think that they get a good start out of Holmes. I think that they shut it down from there. I do think that they win this game by multiple runs. You're able to find that run line price at like a plus 125, plus 130. I'm willing to take a shot here on the Mets run line.
Speaking of run lines here, Greg, too, a pretty inflated price now. And for those of you that follow Greg overnight, you got the better of this number. Braves hosting the Rockies. It'll be Bryce Elder against Herman Marquez. Buddy, you got this run line at $1.35, I believe. It's up to $1.50 already on DraftKings. Money line price just exorbitantly high at minus 311. So your handicap here, Braves should be able to handle a Rockies team that, hey, they got a walk-off win, so they're feeling good about it, but maybe a bounce-back spot here for Atlanta for you.
Oh, absolutely, and with the Atlanta Braves, they have been so much better at home rather than on the road. Just 12 road wins as far this season for the Atlanta Braves. Like, that's absolutely insane. I think that that's the third fewest in the National League right now, but home sweet home has been nice to them, and so has Ronald Acuña Jr. 6 home runs in his first 18 games. Like, if you look at the Braves' overall season numbers in terms of offense, they're in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of runs per game, but Acuña giving you north of 425 on base. This guy's the ultimate cheat code, and what else is a cheat code to your offense? Being able to bat against Herman Marquez, who's got a 70 ERA this far this season. He has been getting banged around like a human pinata at this point. He has been giving up hit after hit after hit, and for Bryce Elder, guy that I really don't like to back, he's actually been halfway decent recently. He's given up 3 runs of fewer in each out of his last 7 starts, and goes up against a Rockies lineup that is averaging gasp 2.5 runs per game away from home. That is unreal. Hitting below the middle side of 200 away from home. Now you bring in Therio Estrada, Orlando Arcia to help out with that, but Lightning's not striking twice. If you had the Giants run run line like I did yesterday, you know that they win that game if it isn't for that Schmidt error out there in the field. And I do think that this time around, the Braves not going to commit that error. Now, they did blow a 6-run lead to the Arizona Diamondbacks about a week or so ago in the ninth inning. Not going to be happening here. I do like that Atlanta Braves run line. And seeing that total of 9, like it over, because I think that Marquez has given up all sorts of runs.
Let me sneak in one more here very quickly, Greg. A's and Kansas City Royals. Royals are now the bane of my existence, trying to score runs. They just couldn't seem to do it against the Yankees here. Can they get some offense going again, or do you think that really we're going to get 2 depressed offenses?
Yeah, with the Kansas City Royals averaging less than 3.1 runs per game at home. And Luis Severino might have some of the most demonstrative home and road splits I've ever seen. For Luis Severino, right now he is giving you an ERA of a 7.10 at home. When he is on the road, 0.87, getting a total between 8.5 and 9. Sign me up for the under there, as I do think that the Royals get into the bullpen. I do like the Royals to be able to cover that run line, but give me that under as well.
I love Big Sev last year in New York. He's doing big things on the road out there in Sacramento. Greg, we appreciate it as always, man. We'll get you some Jello shots if we can make that happen. We'll try to do so.
Please do. Executive orders. Get Greg some Jello shots to be able to give a proper review.
We are back to update round 2 of the U.S. Open. That's next year. Be some other books. Conversation with Greg Peterson in the last segment. Again, VSiN Pro subscribers, all you have to do to get his full card in the day, become a VSiN Pro subscriber, you get access to all of Greg's numbers as well as yours, Jensen. We'll get to the Daily Diamond a little bit later on in the program, break down the College World Series. That's why you are in Omaha today. But right now, we are underway, well underway here. Scotty Scheffler has already teed off to begin his second round at the United States Open in Oakmont. And just like that, by hitting the fairway on the first hole, Scotty has already gone back to the betting favorite at 6-1. It's just, it's ridiculous to me that the guy who's currently on the cut line at 3 over par is still the betting favorite. Overnight, it was John Rahm at plus 550. You've seen that on your screens here. And Scotty was plus 650. It's already gone down 50 cents, and Rahmer's already gone up a full $1.50, which is insane to me. Now, Brooks Koepka, a guy that I've got in pocket here at 95-1, bogeyed the first hole today. So he's already back to 1 under par for the tournament, 3 off the lead of J.J. Spaun. So he's drifted from overnight 12-1 to 14-1. But Jensen, I'm watching that round yesterday. He didn't even play that well, Major Brooks.
Yeah.
And yet he can just kind of figure out a way to flip this switch. Today really feels like the key for me, if you're a Brooks backer like myself and or Bryson DeChambeau, obviously Scotty Scheffler. I don't think we ever count him out as long as he's still ticking in a golf tournament. But for some of these other guys, namely Brooks, Bryson, Rory, today feels like moving day, right? They can't wait and get to a Saturday. They got to make their moving day today.
I agree. And I think the other part of it too is, are we more impressed by guys like, you know, John Rahm or J.J. Spaun, maybe, you know, and a Rahm or a bigger name that we're like, okay, the recent form felt like he'd be a guy to target. J.J. Spaun, and they even made a big deal about it. I'm sure you heard it as well in the coverage, Dave, you know, just talking about that playoff with Rory McIlroy and how he was not necessarily ready for the emotions of it, but very much an overwhelm. I remember you and I were doing the show. We were so lucky we had it going live when we were doing it. We're like, oh God, like this looks like the David and Goliath at this point. It looks totally completely overmatched. So I think that was the cool part about yesterday. I know we talked about, hey, guys going off early, take advantage of maybe a very gettable part of the course. And then we saw, boy, the course really get up on its hind legs and say, all right, come on.
That's right.
Let's see what you got. So I'm kind of anxious to see this morning group where, Dave, from the mentality of you don't have a long time to wait overnight to think about your round positively or negatively, you got to get back out there and let's see how they do this morning.
Oh, that's a great point. In that, you know, if you think, look, 10 guys were under par in the red, as we say, yesterday. And remember, this is going to be top 60 in ties that make the cut. So that's what you're looking at here to condense this field after today on cut day. And when I'm looking at it, I go, well, it feels a little bit, quote unquote, easy for an Oakmont U.S. Open. Only 10 guys were 1 under or better. And again, JJ with the outlier round of the day with nary a par, bogey rather, on his scorecard at 66, 4 under par. Now, I'll give you my updated numbers here from what I gave out here yesterday. And again, some guys I do feel are still in play. I've got Xander Schauffele at 25-1. He was 2 over par for his day. Victor Hovland was all over the map early, pulled it all the way back. And I know you and I have tickets on Vic. He was 54-1 for me, what I have in pocket, finished up at 1 over par. So that number's come down a little bit as well. I mentioned Brooks, good value there on Brooksy here. If he can have a good day too, from 95-1 down to 14-1 currently. Daniel Berger, 2 over par, 100-1, still feels like a kind of on the outside looking in. But I told you about Cameron Young, and Cameron had it to 2 under par, did back up with a couple bogeys late. His number, I got him at 115-1. His number's been cut in half. And I got to tell you, I hope Cam has a good day too today, because if he's in this fight here, that talent, as we talked about, is still omnipresent for a guy like Cameron Young. So I think we've got some live tickets out there, because as you and I talked about, and this is no disrespect, by the way, to a guy like Scotty Scheffler, the only way these tickets have any shots, and Daniel's still at 100-1, the same number I have from pre-tournament, the only way any of these have any life is if Scotty is just a marginal golfer, is just, you know, gives you a chance. And I think that's all we could have asked for in day number one for some of these longer shots that you and I have.
Can I offer you, I'll throw some names out here. You tell me if you'd be willing to jump in live on their respective markets. So as you know, my only ticket is Bryson as far as the outright market is concerned. Have him at plus 885. He's 16-1 right now. I think anywhere plus money for him, top 5, top 10, just knowing that What projected cut is like +3, +4 right yep. now. So find your way to the weekend. If there's anyone that can kind of put it together and put a lightning round in, it would be Bryson. Are we surprised by Jordan Spieth with how he's played?
Pleasantly.
Looking at some of the top, so 330 plus top for top five, and then +$1.60 at top 10. I thought those were quite intriguing markets as well. And then, of course, one of our favorites, the big Swede in Ludvig Åberg, 28-1, but +450 top five and +250 top 10. Like, I just thinking of some juicier numbers of names that where you and I look at it and we assess this market of, I mean, you want to hit your wagon to other ones. I get it if you want to jump on Spawn right now, mm-hmm. just knowing where he is positionally. Colin Morikawa, I know we've been burned by him in the past, but those were other names, Dave, that I'll throw back to you of, hey, you know, especially in the positional markets and the finishing spots, those felt pretty good, especially with the majority of them at plus money.
Yeah, I don't think anything for me would scare me off those names that you just mentioned at those price points, because as we mentioned here, if just by watching day one, and I think it's really, you've got to watch this stuff to see what we think the winning score can be. I'm still convinced this winning score could be low under par, like one or two under par, could still be the winner. So, like, look, if J.J. Spawn goes out there and duplicates what he did today and bogey free round, you tip your cap. But I just don't see that happening. So, really, to get to those numbers that you're talking about here, Jensen, I do think you're looking at even par after 4 days could cash some of those top 10 tickets. I think that's what we're still looking at. So, I wouldn't be deterred from that. Now, look, would I stay away from Rory? Yes, because you and I talked about that well before the tournament, that I just don't know where his headspace is. And after starting off 2 under and then ending up 4 over, if things go south, I wonder if he's not going to be able to fight back. We always talk about fighting for your betting dollar. Bryson DeChambeau is going to fight for your betting dollar. There's no doubt about it. Scottie Scheffler is going to fight for your betting dollar. Those guys are going to be in the fight. I saw Victor Hovland fight for your betting dollar. Colin Morikawa do that yesterday as well. So there were rounds that could have gotten away and guys that kind of pulled those in. And I will say this about J.J. Spawn. I don't think he's going to win this golf tournament, but he is a fighter again. And if you want to look at top five right now, I don't know that I play that at 2-1 because that feels a little bit short on a guy like JJ. But he said this, Jensen, and it caught my attention. He said he heard, like you and I and everybody else had heard, how hard the golf course was going to be. It's going to punch you in the face. And he said he's watching the videos like everybody else. And he said, I knew it was going to be hard. And he said, and because of that, it kept me engaged. It kept me mentally engaged. He goes, I play better when I'm a little bit intimidated. How about that? So like he said, you know, when sometimes I don't have any fear, I get lazy. There's lazy shots that come. How about that mentality of, ooh, it scared me straight, this golf course. And because of it, I was in tune with every single shot. That is a mentality that you have to have on a golf course like Oakmont. And I got to tell you, when I heard that from J.J. Spawn, I went, wow, that's a different perception that I hadn't heard. Scared straight almost, and that's why he played great golf yesterday. What do you think of that, mentals?
Yeah, and again, kind of the way you have to approach specifically not only the competition of who he's going up against, but the course in of itself, right? I think that's probably, as we talked about Wednesday, we were very anxious to hear from a lot of different golfers on how did the course treat you? And more importantly, guys that went off early yesterday versus guys that went off later, because now we get the role reversal.
Right.
And with a day in, how did it affect shot making? How did it affect shot selection, placement? Again, obviously, you know, being in the fairway has so many more advantages with the way the rough played yesterday and what we anticipate moving forward. But yeah, that's why I said I look at Spawn in all the. I mean, he's still $1.10, top 10. He's 2-1 in top five. Like, I still think those are very advantageous prices for a guy like that, the way that he's already gotten out in the field.
I will just say the early returns here, day two, not good. Golf course is winning. Brooks Koepka, 1 over through 1,
yeah.
Back to 1 under. John Rahm, bogey on 1 as well. So he's back to even par, 4 off the lead. Russell Henley, Jordan Spieth, pars early on. Only one guy I'm seeing right now, Matt Wallace, that's gotten off to a good start here with a birdie on his first two holes here. So, again, the golf course looking tough early, but that's what you expect. It's Oakmont. It's a U.S. Open. It's going to be tough. Betting splits. You can have access to those here when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. As little as $9.99 for your very first month. You get those numbers not just from me at Circa, but also DraftKings. So you have many different options to break down these games. When you use those betting splits, you are going to bet smarter. So check it out today, VSiN.com/subscribe. Back with hour number two in just a couple minutes.